You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking around the court square sidewalks, looking in the windows, things I couldn't want. There's Johnson's Hardware and Morgan's Jewelry, and the old Lee King's Apothecary. They were the little man, the little man. I go back now, the stores are empty, except an old coat sign dated 1950. Board it up like they never existed, renovated and called historic business. There goes the little man. There goes the little man. Now the court square's just a set of streets, and people go around, but they seldom think about the little man that built this town before the big money shut him down and killed the little man. Little man. He pumped your gas and he'd clean your glass.
9:18 on a Monday. I don't know where Musselman is.
Came where you do it yourself. You buy a lotto ticket and food off the shelf. Forget the little man. Forget about that little man.
You know, you listen to Lee Tuttle, I mean, literally, it's not believable. Like, are you kidding? I mean, it's dumbfounding. How does this go on for so long? And again, it hasn't gone on for years. Okay? It's gone on for more than a decade. And so to me, what I'd be curious to know is, I want to know, not from go down the chain of command, I don't want to know this from you. I want to find out from spouses, who did you send your email to? Did you send your email to anybody in the chain of command? And I want to find out what that person did, because you don't have to pull on this issue at all to get right the shit to start to fall out. All you have to do is make a phone call. Hey, I'm looking at these pictures. I mean, for instance, the I'm not finished with the post yet. Cuz I've got to upload an image of the non-disclosure agreement, and I want to do that and put that in the post before I unleash it. But when you look at this, and I'll put in the post itself, I'll put all the pictures that she sent me. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So there's the vent. I'll describe it for you. There's the vent that kind of is in the bedroom, right, that you see. And there's mold lining the vent, the inside of the vent, right? So you have the levers so that those things are horizontal, right? And so you can see the back of the vent. There's mold that sits on every place that moisture, it looks like, collects in there. Okay, so that's one picture. Next picture, inside more ventilation. This looks like some kind of intake. No, I take that back. It just looks like ventilation work. There's mold inside of that. Okay, next picture. More mold inside a different ventilation conduit. And then there's a picture of carpet. Okay. Mold in the carpet. On the others. Now, if you look at the carpet, it's, what's that color? Like a tan. What's the color? Top? Mauve? Hold on. I'll get my clothes. T-A-U-P-E. What's mauve? How do I even know this? I don't, M-A-U-V, mauve color, top. Mauve looks a little more reddish. It's actually more tan than Taupe. Okay, so a little bit lighter color than Taupe, T-A-U-P-E. Yeah, it's close to a beige. So there's this beige carpet, right? And it's pulled up and flipped over. And there's mold on the bottom of the carpet. And then you look at the pad, right? And this is part of Lee's story that, well, we'll replace the carpet, but not the pad. Like, what are we, stupid? Like, do you not know anything about anything? Not only do you have to replace the carpet and the pad, but you've got to find the problem, which will probably be underneath the pad. And you've got to deal with that. You've got to dry that out, and maybe you might put a sealant on that or something to get this to stop and not happen again. You got to fix it. What? You got to fix this. Whoa, lady, are you kidding me? Like, yeah, I don't think you know what you're talking about. You're going to have to talk to our regional people to do something that crazy. Yeah. And so to me, what I want to know is from the women that have been dealing this, the spouses, male or female, that have been dealing with this for years, okay? I want to know who you sent correspondence to, okay? I want you to forward that to me. And if you're on active duty and you got sent one of these things and you didn't check it out, you can just get out of the military right now. Okay? We have no use for you. You won't be promoted. You know, we won't boot you out this second, but you failed. You fucking failed. And so, to me, I don't want to hear from the chain of command, like all these excuses. I just want to know that this is the one question court-martial. This is the old way it used to be. Were you in charge when this happened? You're done. 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 You were CC'd on this email. Well, my aide never brought it. My aide screened my email. My aide never gave it. I don't care. Okay? I don't care. You're fired. Get out. Because it's just... So, yeah. So, witch hunt. Yeah, email. Mac, that sounds like a witch hunt. No shit, it sounds like a witch hunt. Here's a picture of Lee's son with this nebulizer. The mold was the worst in his room. And the caption says, Lee Tuttle, who says her son Weston developed breathing difficulties due to the mold at their home at Fort Polk, which is in Louisiana. Quote, the mold was worst in his room. He wouldn't have these problems if they'd done things right. And that's from the article that Reuters did that started all this. But again, the Reuters article is simply the public shaming and the public's telling of this story that families have been fighting for more than a decade. And so, to me, you know, again, we talked about discipline in the Marine Corps and things like that, especially relative to officers, how it's non-existent. You can retire. That's your punishment. Not much of a punishment. You know, how about you get reduced? How about your failure, right, to this really sacred duty? It's one thing to screw over, you know, somebody in their career. It's another thing to screw over their family medically and put them through this kind of stuff. So to me, to the spouse community, I want to know who you contacted. I want to know if they were on active duty. I want to know if... I just want to see them on the two line. And I'll validate that went to their email address. And what happens after that, I don't really care. If you contacted somebody in the chain of command, they're done in this military. Go away, Simba. Run away. Yeah, it's disgusting. It's disgusting. And how, again, we're not getting any complaints, so we don't need to have this oversight capability. Right? There's an old saying in the military, and that is, expect what you inspect. Expect what you inspect. And that means if you don't inspect it, if you don't take a look at it, then you know what you're going to get? You're going to get garbage. You're going to get garbage. And again, in the hearing, the Senate Armed Services Committee from last week, the Secretary of the Army said that in 2013, they had a deputy, right, a deputy chief, I don't know what they call them in the Army, but sent out some kind of email saying that base commanders were no longer responsible for the implementation, responsible for the implementation of the base housing contract. That's interesting. So who is? How does this work? Anyway, so my thanks to Lee Tuttle for coming on. And let me tell you, you will hear a whole bunch about, because what I want to do is just interview spouses or service members. It doesn't matter to me. I just want tell them their story. Where did you live? What happened to you? What response did you get? And who did you contact? Because they are going to be out of the job. Woe be to you if you ignored this. If somebody came to you looking for help and you didn't do what you're supposed to do, woe be to you. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Here's an email from a friend of mine, a battle buddy of mine, right? We had issues at our place in Kingsville, which is in Texas, right? And his wife fighting. And again, you have some local idiot, and you don't have another recourse other than to go through this local person in this housing office, because the base doesn't do shit. And so what's happened to these families is they've been damaged financially, and they have their children and themselves have been damaged physically. And in the meantime, what you have is these corporations who are laughing all the way to the bank. They have their rent collected automatically, so their administrative costs for collecting rents, taking renters to court to get money out of it, that doesn't exist. All they have to do is do the maintenance. They have a constant stream of tenants. So tenant comes in, stuff breaks, it gets fixed, tenant leaves, you inspect it, they know they're going to be inspected, so it tends to be kept in a pretty decent state. You may have to throw a coat of paint on it after a number of years. You may have to replace the carpet after a number of years, and so it goes. And then you reap the profit from that. What a good business, right? Your risk is limited. And again, what I'm really curious to see is how much profit are these guys yanking out of these things? Now, they'll cook their books, right, before they turn anything in, if they turn anything in at all. How much money, right? And evidently, according to the Senate Armed Services Committee from last week, base commanders negotiate these deals. What does that mean? Well, that means the lawyers of the Marine Corps are in on it. Oh, that's awesome. That's what we love, right? Lawyers that work for the low bidder. Exactly. Sorry if you're a lawyer, but that's the way it is. Mental health providers, right? And I hate bashing on mental health providers, but let me tell you, part of the mental health crisis in the DOD and the VA, your mental health care is provided by the low bidder. So what do you get? You get the great therapist? No, unless they're great therapists that want to work for not very much money, then you might get one. But the truth of the matter is, right? You're dealing with a low bidder. And it's the truth. But you can't say that. Because, shit, we wouldn't want to tell the truth, just like in this housing stuff. We wouldn't want to tell the truth. So it's a bit maddening. It's a bit maddening. So you're going to hear about it. You're going to hear, and again, I have friends at Camp Lejeune where Mike and Josh and I were at a month and a half to two months ago. And, you know, I got an email from one of them after they listened to the show, and they said, you wouldn't believe the problems we're having after that hurricane. So anyway, so joining me is Michael Christopher Musselman, all the way from Texas. What's up, Gunner?
Hey, I just saw that you called. It just came through. It said missed call, and I'm like, what?
Exactly. Like I sent.
Well,
you,
I thought you were busy. So
I sent you a text. Hey, 9:15.
Did you give me a text?
Yes,
oh,
I
yeah.
did. I call at 9:17. I get nothing. I'm like, son of a bitch. Again?
No, did you see what I wrote here? I'm
no,
here.
No. Yes.
Okay, I didn't get anything back from
no,
you until
I gave
just
you,
a little
I,
bit ago.
I gave you the thumbs up. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Unbelievable.
Technical difficulties.
Hey, I was up in Rockland, California with Christopher Bronzy.
Yeah, I know.
And we went to a party, his gunning through, for his brother, who turned 50. And they, Filipino family, right? They had the big Filipino party. And everybody singing karaoke, the pig. Oh my God, it was awesome! It was awesome. I got to tell you, the Filipino culture is a big culture in the Marine Corps, big culture in the Marine Corps, big culture in the Navy because a lot of Filipinos serve.
Not anymore.
What do you mean?
It stopped. That was during our time.
Since we left,
Mac, that stopped a long time ago, man.
Well, I was in a long time ago.
I know. When we were young Marines, you would go on a ship, and there'd be Filipinos everywhere. That's what they say. They served rice at every meal on a ship.
They were.
But they don't do that anymore. It's the older guys.
Who think that?
Well, no, the older guys that are still around that are retired chiefs, senior chiefs, master chiefs.
And these guys were what? Like the stewards of the Navy were all Filipino.
At first, they couldn't hold security clearances because they weren't citizens of the United States.
So that's the only job they could do?
So they could, yeah, cooks, all that stuff.
And they were, everywhere.
Yeah, the Filipinos that joined the Navy, Philippines is not a territory. It's not even a... It was just... Most of those people that joined in the Navy and like that were citizens. They were getting their citizenship. Yeah, so I asked that a long time ago. I was a young little buck running around a ship. I said, why are all the cooks in the mess hall Filipinos? And they speak Tagalog back there. And so you never understood what they were saying. You're like, what the hell? And so they'd all be yelling at each other in Tagalog. Cooking rice and kind of weird dishes, but like pork adobo. I love that stuff. Don't get me wrong, but those guys could turn. Like I said, so Guam, not too far off from Philippines. Some of the best dishes ever had were made with spam. Oh, God, that's where I get it today. I love spam, and then my daughter today, she makes spam.
What?
Yeah, because I made spam. So what I did was I cubed up spam, I seasoned it, I fried it up on a pan, and then I mixed in like a tomato-based sauce, put some beans in there, and then poured it over rice. She was like, Dad, she took a bite. Dude, she does that all the time now. She's like, it's so funny. The other woman that lives here, she's like, you guys are gross. I ain't touching that shit.
Exactly. The spam's like, that's a World War II dish, for God's sakes. What the hell?
So good, man. No. That salty potted meat.
Is it meat? What is spam actually made of?
I think it's like all the important parts on a pig and a cow and I don't know. I don't know what animal it comes from. I think it's pork. That's the name spam. Is ham.
That's interesting.
Don't get me wrong, because I've never had pork that tastes like that. I like Spam. I like thin sliced Spam. Cook it on a pan, and then put it in like a bun and put some tomato on it. Mmm.
Tomato?
Yeah. An onion slice. Mmm. On what? A nice brioche bun.
Why is Spam called Spam? To answer the question, before the internet became commercialized, unsolicited commercial email sent to the name, this is Spam.
Well, they're saying that Spam is actually named after the internet?
Well, no, they're talking about email Spam.
Oh, okay.
Email Spam.
They're stupid. Hey, I saw a thing today that made me mad.
Well, hold on. I just want to finish. And so,
what's Spam? What's Spam named?
No, the my weekend with, so there's, Filipino families, man, they roll big, right?
They're connected.
But it was so cool. And our buddy, Chris Bronzy, is a legend in this family because of his relationship with his company, a guy named Winston Haugen. And Winston told this funny, funny story that he, they were trying to like get him to drop in boot camp. He said, when in my first few weeks, when I'd go to the field, they'd kick me in the shins and they would, and, you know, he's telling these stories and they'd be yelling at me and I'd just look him in the face because that's what I was supposed to do. And they were like, why are you eyeballing me, son? But they used another word right for it. Instead of eyeballing, they said it something else. And he said, but I just was told that I just always look him in the face. And then in the second phase, this guy comes up to me and goes, hey, Haugen, man. Why are you looking at him in the face, man? And he's like, is that what they're saying? I'm not supposed to do that?
Yeah.
He said, I didn't understand what they were saying because I didn't understand the English that well. And it was so funny. But it was just awesome to see, you know, you see two guys that, you know, Chris and Winston, every day getting it on in the streets of Ramadi in 2004 when we didn't have up-armored Humvees, we didn't drop aviation ordnance. They went in there, you know, like, you know, World War II style clearing, you know, Berlin or some shit. That's what they did in Ramadi every day. And these guys, and you see the love in the room. It was just a great, it was a fun weekend. It was a fun weekend. Hanging out, driving up and down.
But if you ever go,
the state of California is as green as I've ever seen it driving, you know, up the valley. Oh, my God, Mike, you've never seen a greener state in your life because of all the rain.
Well, it'll burn. Don't worry. Yeah, that'll change.
After you have a mudslide and then a fire. So, anyway. All right. Yeah. What were you going to say? First of all, give us
Hawaii. When you go to Hawaii, though, they make a snack. I'll never forget this. So it's like a marinated teriyaki Spam slice on rice. It looks like a big piece of sushi.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so good, man. So freaking good. It's called like a Portuguese steak. That is to die for. If you go to Hawaii, you got to get the little Spam snack. It's Portuguese steak.
Oh, they had
Marines. The Marines that are in Hawaii have got to have had that.
I have.
No doubt.
They have they had lumpia there, and so, you know, they have all this food laying out, a ton of food, and,
pork adobo, yeah.
And then the tequila rolled out. I'm like, I think I gotta go, man. That's never a good thing. So, anyway.
Well, they don't drink tequila, and they drink like a ramen. Philippines.
They were drinking tequila, so I don't know what part of the Philippines. No, he's from Manila. Have you ever been to Manila? I've never been to Manila.
Yeah, I've been to Manila.
I never have. Is that when you were saw the fruit bat?
No, that's
later.
That was where were we? No, that wasn't in Manila. That was towards not Mindanao.
Oh, Mindanao! Yikes!
It was down in that area. Yeah, I was looking through. I sent you a picture of me on my mini bike.
Last week. How old were you? Mike looks like he's like 7 years old on his mini bike.
Yeah, I was about seven.
Right.
I used to ride that thing. Like I said, so I had the first mini bike in the whole freaking neighborhood. I was the cool kid. So, I mean, I was driving a mini bike when I think I was in kindergarten. So, other kids would be riding bicycles, you know, and be like standing up, pedaling hard, and I'd be like just cruising next to them, like, bang, 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 bang. And it took so long for them to go to the park because the quarry was where the pond and stuff were. That's where we go to the park. We call it a park. Quarry's not a park. But for kids that are seeking adventure, the quarry
are you
is
kidding
full
me?
Of adventure.
That and a construction site.
Well, the quarry is an ongoing construction site. You know, they're always boring out and digging out holes.
Mike, come on.
So it's just
construction sites?
It's like Evel Knievel. And this is the time that Evel Knievel was big, too. So.
Oh, shit. You know? So you're going to jump the Snake River at the quarry?
Well, I did. I jumped the... So the reason I had to I rode my mini bike all the time is because previously to this, I had my mini bike, and I knew that... I don't know what told me, but I just didn't have the aerodynamics to fly through the air. You know, so I chose my bike, and what happened was I kind of hesitated on the ramp, on the takeoff ramp, and I didn't get enough lift, and I was like that short going over this gorge, you know, like Snake River. I mean, that's as big as it felt it was, you know. And as I went over, my front tire hit the front end of the other side of the cliff face. And so my bike compressed. I went flying over the handlebars, stunned the crap out of me. It didn't really hurt me. You know, I was pissed. The handlebars hit my chest. My bike was broken. I knew I was going to take shit for that. And so, you know, I was like, so the walk of shame back from the quarry. Walking my bike because I wouldn't ride.
That's the worst.
Yeah, and then, of course, because I just got it, and it was like, all right, you're not getting a bike for a while. And I said, okay, so I'm on the mini bike. It's like, punish me more, Mr. Rabbit. Don't throw me in the briar patch. So I had my mini bike, and all my neighborhood friends, we'd all ride to the quarry. And it was probably, you know, again, as an adult looking back, it was probably a mile. As a kid, it was like, 15 miles, because you wouldn't go directly there. You know, you'd go pick up Paul McCoy, and you'd have to go get Walter, and you'd have to go get Lester. You know,
all of them.
And so you're zigzagging through this whole area, and then finally you get to the quarry. And like I said, we'd make it like a big deal, man. It was like, because it was huge. And so we'd pack a lunch. You'd have your little paper bag sack lunch. And that was jerry-rigged with some kind of twine, like, around your body, so it felt like you're a hobo going out, doing your thing. And then we'd have lunch, and then we'd just do stupid, like, hey, try this. You'd do a wheelie going down the hill, and then everybody else would try it. Lester would crash, we'd all laugh at Lester.
And now it's all gone. So did your dad fix it?
No, I got another one.
What? See, that's incentivizing stupid behavior.
Yeah. But the mini bike lasted forever until I got a little bit too old for it. I think I was like 9. And that's when I went through the fence.
9? But Honda had bigger mini bikes. Remember those?
They were so I went out. Yeah, so I started with that. And then after, this is where it gets great. After I drove that through the white picket fence, the throttle got stuck. It was old. And so, I went to a YZ120 or a Kawasaki or a Yamaha 125.
Whoa.
YZ20.
That's a motorcycle, though, right?
Yeah, it was a dirt bike. Strictly, that was all dirt bike.
Let me tell you, there's really nothing as funny as when the throttle gets stuck. Now, I know.
Oh, really? I can think of a lot more things that are funny.
When you're watching it and you see the throttle get stuck, and everybody goes, oh, shit. And you send them. For whatever reason, people try to stop with their feet. Well, not for whatever reason. So what happens is you see them with their hands on the handlebars, the thing take off like a rocket, and their feet come off the feet rest because they're trying to stop them. And then they're like, whoa! And you're like, ah! And it normally ends quick.
Well, the mini bike, you know, those it had a Briggs & Stratton lawnmower engine underneath your legs. You had to pull it, you know, and all it had was a throttle and a brake on top. I don't even think I had a front brake. I had a rear brake. The only way to turn that thing off with the throttle stuck was directly between your legs, the spark plug was right there. There's a kill plate.
Right.
So you press the kill plate against the spark plug, and the engine dies.
Well, you're out of control.
When you're out of control doing, you know, max speed 27 miles an hour, rah, through the grass, through the front lawns, and you're trying to do the kill plate, like, come on. And so
you can
so
see
fast,
why it was so funny. It was like some little kid
through the fence.
Smashed Ooh. Into some old lady's car. Right?
You're fixing that. Yeah.
And you're trying to, like, first of all, he's knocked unconscious.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised I didn't get a collapsed lung. I definitely broken ribs, punctured spleen, and this is what I get. You're going to fix that fence. Yeah. Right now,
I can't breathe.
Get up off the ground, you sissy. Quit feeling sorry for yourself. What are you, a girl?
Exactly.
No, I'm not a girl. I'm getting up. You know? I'm up. Stand up straight like a man, you
Exactly. Punk. And get the bike off the ground.
Hey, pull that piece of fence sticking out of your side. What are you trying to do? Get some sympathy around here?
Yeah. What do you think we are? We're the Musclemans for crying out
loud. That's what, I mean, you're like, oh. So I went real fast from a 125, which is a decent bike. And it's fast, man. That bike was, it was a terror. And I used to ride, I had a helmet with that bike. I mean, I was, you know, you're doing 60, 70 miles an hour through the forest.
I had a helmet with
that. So then I went from, before I was, like, I think I was 15, just before I was learning to drive, I went from a 125 to a YZ490. So I want, if you don't know the difference, so I went from a 125cc Yamaha to a 490cc YZ490, and back in the day, the YZs had this, like, ridiculous seat that was almost at an angle because they were such high-performance dirt bikes. They were notorious. You could climb a freaking mountain at 90 degrees with that thing. It had so much power. And so, but the seat was jacked up real high. So when you sit in it, you get a lot of cushion. Problem is, I didn't weigh that much at 15 years old. And the bike was so tall that I couldn't get on it. I had to wheel it over to a picnic table to get on board. And then kickstart that thing. You had, like, talk about bravery. So you had to push away from the kick, throw the clutch in, push it away, kickstart it. Because you only had, like, you know, maybe 10, 15 feet before you start losing a little bit of momentum. And then the bike's going to tip over and you jump off. Then wheel it back over because the thing was so big. But it was a great bike. That was a great bike.
Did your dad like you or was he trying to kill you?
Yeah, he liked it. You know, but it's the tough thing. My dad used to make motorcycles.
Oh, he did?
He built them.
He was he's a biker guy?
Oh, yeah. Back in the day, Norton, he had an Indian.
Ooh,
he had
Indian?
A Harley. Yeah.
Whoa.
Some really nice bikes.
That's a serious biker
racing,
guy.
He had a racing Indian that was super fast, man. I used to get so scared. I mean, when you're a little kid, you go to wrap your hands around your dad or somebody that's in front, and you're interlocking your fingers. But you can feel the centrifugal force pulling you from the seat. And you're like, Dad! You couldn't hold on any longer. You know, you're like, ah! And then he slows down. You're like, what? Dude, I'm being pulled off. You're going too fast. Hold on tighter, you sissy.
Oh, that's... Hold on, here's two emails. Mac, did you just say lumpia? I think I did, man. I think I did. Yeah, you know what? And lumpia is like a lot of other things. Like, you know, you'll find Mexican food that's similar, right?
But not lumpia.
But the sauce that goes with it, it's got some kick to it. It's kind of like a sweet and sour sauce, but it has more kick to it. And I saw that on table. I was like, you know.
If they would have put a plate of lumpia on the table, I would have taken that plate and walked away. I kid you not.
It was a table of it, man. It was a table of it.
I would have walked away with the plate. Poured the sauce all over the whole thing and just walked away with it. Thanks, guys. That's for everybody.
Your name came up. We went to breakfast yesterday morning. with Winston's wife and a friend of hers, and we were talking, and one of them was talking about, she tells a terrible story of her 9-year-old nephew getting a hold of a shotgun that was supposed to be in a closet and locked, but they didn't lock it. The closet was open. Takes the shotgun and points it at a 7-year-old brother and shoots him and kills him. She's telling this story, saying that we got raised in a house that had firearms in it. We all went to hunter safety course when we were, you know, the earliest you could go was when you were like 11 or something like that. And
right.
We all went. My dad, and she's saying we shot trap and skeet, we had Benelli, over under shotguns and she said so. But she showed me a picture of a new handgun she bought, and it's a female pistol, right? Smaller hand grip and stuff like that. So I was talking about the way you teach self defense and in that, first teach awareness. Awareness, awareness, awareness.
Everything. Head on a swivel and what that means. Yep.
Because if you get to the point where you're in a hand-to-hand confrontation with somebody, you're going to lose that 99% of the time. With a man that's angry, with adrenaline pumping through his body, you are more than likely going to lose that. So the key to that is don't get in that confrontation. And then have a handgun. And I talked to them about shooting reduced loads. Winston's wife was talking about, which a lot of guys do, right? They own 45s and 9mm, and you take your wife out, and you want to shoot, right? And it's like the last thing they're focused on is hitting a target. This thing's going to jump. So anyway, your name came
scared the shit out of them. Yeah.
Your name. And they were both like, where do you find this ammunition? I said, you can find it at your ammunition store. Ask them. So anyway, funny. Funny, funny, funny. Olympia. Olympia in any kind of carbonated drink, but tastes really good with beer, too. So, they had all that. Here's another email. I was listening on Friday, and I swear to God, I was laughing my ass off in my car going home, listening to you two talk about being kids in the 60s and the 70s. It brought back so many good memories. When Mac mentioned construction sites a few minutes ago, oh my God, we used to go over to a construction site near my home, wait for the last truck to leave. We would be lurking on the horizon when that last pickup would get around the corner. We would descend on that. There was no amount of security, and back then there was very little that could keep us out of those places. It was the best.
My first romance took place in a construction site with my girlfriend. We went there. We were like hanging out. We're like, same thing. So we're like, we're walking through it. And that's right. Got the balls to give her a kiss in a house being built, the construction site.
How romantic.
That was pretty romantic, I bet.
For her.
All the walls, the framed out walls, no sheetrock on it. You could see through the whole house, and I'm sitting there playing, Mr. Romantic.
plotting my first kiss.
And it worked out. It was like,
Can I tell everybody listening, if you weren't listening last hour, listen to that interview with, her name is Lee Tuggle. Her husband's in the Army. And she's one of many families that are living the reality of this whole base, housing thing. And she said something that stuck in my head. She said, we need your help. Support the troops doesn't mean put a stupid bumper sticker on your car. It means when we need help, you're there to help us. And you want to know something? That shit's true. Right?
Yeah.
And so...
Well, just give your charity and then tell everybody, I support the troops. I gave to a charity.
Yeah, we support the troops. What they're asking for is contact your congressman and say, you need to get involved in this shit. You need to make this right. Because, the shit part is, there's little kids now that have asthma and they're sick. that breathed in mold for, you know, however long they breathed it in, and that's in their brain and shit, those families will deal with that for the rest of their lives. And so again, I thought her comment was pretty spot on. Support the troops doesn't end with putting a bumper sticker on your car and giving somebody the thumbs up. It means when they need help, you help. And this is certainly an issue that they need your help with. So listen to that last interview. And,
well, a lot of people don't understand what they, you know, they get in that, like, how can I help? How can I do that? No, you're right. If you write to your congressman, the person that's responsible, you see this and you're like, you know, you can do something. No, it's not just a military thing. It's just the right thing to do.
Right. Right. And again, but what do politicians respond to? Public pressure. And it's sad that it is that way, but that is the way. Because, look, until spouses went on TV and embarrassed people, everybody said, what are you talking about? And so I said something, and I'd be curious what you think about this, Mike. When we find out, when we start looking at how did they not know, because we all know the stories of families fighting for this shit and not getting any help from the privatized housing office. So I would want to know from spouses, who did you send your emails to? Because if you send them to the base CG or the base sergeant major, right, people are going to get their careers ended over this. I just want to know.
Necessarily, though.
Well, no, I mean, no, that's what
you
I would want
to believe that.
Well, no, what I want to find out is, did you send, right, Mrs. Musselman, did you send anything to the base CG or the base sergeant major? And if they did, I don't care what your excuse is for not acting on it. Because, Mike, we both know. So let's just say fictitiously, you know, your wife is having an issue, right, and sends an email. If you picked up the phone and say, hey, I'm looking at the email you sent me, Mrs. Musselman, and I'm looking at the pictures of the mold in your vents and in your carpet, and I just wanted to ask you a few questions about it. And in the course of that conversation, your wife would say, well, you know, and I'm not the only one dealing with this, right? And my point is this, you didn't have to poke around at all to find this. Because the spouses would tell you about it. And so I would start canvassing for, I want to know who you contacted.
I hope you're right, but shit, you know, our military sometimes doesn't even do its active duty guys right.
Right. No, you're right about that.
You know, look at we were talking about the shipping thing that the whole Navy went through. Debacle. You know, if they can't fix that, how do you expect them to fix the housing development?
No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, but I hope that I'm wrong, but you know, experience has always told me that, you know, in some degree at that level, they become politicians too.
And that's fine. So you're going to pay like a politician pays. I'm okay with that. You're going to pay. Because if any one of these spouses sent you, well, my aide screens my email and he didn't send it to me. That's your problem, not mine. You're fired. Get out. You know, you're done. I just, this stuff has been around for a long time, and these stories have been around for a long time, and these people got no help, and that, to me, is bullshit. Anyway, so what else is going on? Give us a garage update.
So this whole weekend, the whole garage is painted now, that color, that wall.
It's pretty impressive. Color. The garage, it's all shaping up. It's all beginning to come together. When do your stuff gets delivered pretty soon, yes?
Yeah, the one key thing I'm waiting on is hopefully it comes today. It says that it's out for delivery today. Is I need a new fence for my table saw to really start this whole project.
A fence?
The fence will allow me to do accurate cuts. The fence I had was okay, but not for a project of this magnitude.
Right. Well, you need the type of precision that you need to have good cuts so the cabinets all look good, the drawers all fit right, everything's good.
Yeah.
Right, I'm with you.
And so once I get that fence in, then I can kick everything off. But I got about just everything to go, start. Everything's prepped. The walls are marked with the studs. I'm having dreams of like cutting wood. Like I'll lay there in bed and I can't sleep and I'm like, do I want to do 2-inch dado or tongue and groove or do I want to, then I'll get up.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Ugh. But painting the garage, let me tell you, if you don't own a spray gun painter, and it took for a while for me to actually, I don't know if it was, I was intimidated by it because like, meh, I'll just use the roller and the brushes.
Right.
And do it the hard way. And let me tell you something from experience right now. If you don't own a spray gun painter, you know, and not even, well, you don't have to get like a huge contractor one. You can just get like a, like I got, it's a Graco. It holds about, I think, a quart of paint at each time. And it's a disposable little bladder that, it, you know, so you pour paint in there, cook it up, prime it. I did the big, huge wall, in about 10 minutes. I did the left side wall in about 5 minutes.
Because that's like, what, a two-day job, right? If you do it, like, with the rollers.
Oh, yeah.
You put a coat on, you give it time to dry.
The crazy thing to think about is it's always the taping. If you want a successful paint job,
tape.
Success comes in taping, prepping. If you don't, you're going to be there all day long. You know, so my experience is spend the time taping.
Tape twice.
Get a spray gun.
Tape twice, paint once.
Yeah. It's huge. It's just such a beneficial, you know, position to be in. I can't even tell you how easy it is. Oh, it's fantastic.
15 minutes to paint it. That's great.
And it was ridiculous, man. I mean, look, and I did a primer coat. I did a primer, and then I let that dry, and then I come over with the paint. And literally, dude, it is like stupid, ridiculously fast. And then I'm sitting there telling myself, like, what was I thinking in the past?
So what do you dump the paint into? Do you dump it into? Is there something that affixes to the paint can? And a hose that you carry, or what do you do with the paint?
Oh, on this paint gun, it's a little bladder that it's part of the whole gun.
Okay.
So it hangs underneath. It looks like a small paint can. It's underneath the gun. So you filled up that little bladder, screw it into the bottom of the paint gun, prime it. You just turn the switch, prime. And all that does is create a vacuum, and then turn the nozzle to paint, and then go to town, man. So simple. I mean, I can't even describe how simple it was. Like I said, I was embarrassed to know that I painted with brushes and rollers.
Yeah. All right. Anything else before I let you go?
Mm.
All right. We're done.
I will document once I get started.
We need a picture of the new painted garage, I think, for the update.
Yeah, I will. I'll send that to you today.
Got it. All right, man. I'll talk to you.
All right.
Later. There you have it. Michael Musselman with an update. Yeah, somebody sent me an email. Hell, I'd forgotten about the Filipino stewards. Yeah, they dominated being stewards, and they dominated being cooks, in especially in the Navy, because the Navy had such a huge presence in the Philippines. And we folded that tent a while ago. Did you say lumpia? Ken makes awesome lumpia. It's one of my favorite things he makes. It's good stuff. And you know what? Some of the best dishes around the world come from things like Spam and, you know, things that are really cast away, and then poor communities take them and they make them into delicacies almost. Yeah. Man, so if you look around on things that taste really good and what they are, like, what is menudo? It's like the inside of a cow's bladder, or not bladder, stomach or something. I mean, like, well, how did that happen? Well, you know, the rich people weren't eating that part of the cow. So that was left over. So people took it and started putting butter on it and garlic and whatever to make it taste good. Anyway, that'll do it on a Monday. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. You're going to hear. I recap the Senate Armed Service Committee hearing on Monday. And at some point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and I'm going to extract some of this audio so you can hear them firsthand. And I'm going to do that with the hearing on the 13th of spouses, and you're going to hear what they had to say. So the bottom line is, I support the troops is more than a bumper sticker. Okay? It is more than a bumper sticker. And you can only imagine, and Lee Tuggle says this in the interview, okay, you're hearing from women who've been spouses for a while, okay? So what's a young enlisted family go through? You know, do they just shrug and pay the money and move on? The answer to that is probably. They get exploited and all this. So again, contact your congressman, right? I want you to be invested in this issue. It's important. So do that. My thanks to Lee Tuggle for coming on today. Because again, as we were talking, the whole issue of retribution came up. Will people pay with their careers for some of this stuff? And it came up time and again in the Senate Armed Service Committee. Troops, the quote-unquote, the troops, the same group that everybody supports, the troops, are nervous that there's going to be reprisals for coming forward and telling the truth. Everybody says no, but anyway, so my thanks to Lee for coming on. And I met her husband, who hopped on the phone after we did the interview. And again, these guys are actually, he and I are battle buddies. He was in Afghanistan in 2010 when I was there. Yeah. Anyway, so my thanks to her for coming on and heed what she said. On a Monday, don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues right after this. But this part, the live part, is over and out.